It's a Saturday morning time once again for a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Ted Farrell. Good morning, Ted. Happy New Year to you and everybody at the Haskell's and our listeners as well, of course.
Happy New Year to you, dreading on this very odd morning as far as it looks like we're in London with all this fog. But it's a great day and a great way to end the New Year, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is, and I tell you what, it's saved. I should have waited, but I shoveled a little bit before I lit the lump charcoal, and I could have just waited and let the rain take care of it. But yeah, it was grilling season again. Not that it isn't over ever.
Always grilling season, and even when we had that little snowfall about a week or so ago, that was the first thing that the snowplow plowed out was the smoker and the grill. And, you know, you got to keep those fires going. And, you know, this girth that I have, you always got to keep it fit as well.
Well, what? Here we are, the final show of 2024. What can we talk about this morning, Ted?
Well, you know, it's probably a no-brainer here. We're going to talk about sparkling wine because 'tis the season to have a little sparkling wine to celebrate the end of a good year. Or, as Winston Churchill once said, you know, in victory, I need it or I deserve it. And in defeat, I need it. So sparkling wine has had its history throughout the time on Eon. And it's always been an interesting thing where sparkling wine, everyone thinks, was only a kind of a recent invention only in the last couple hundred years, maybe in the last 400 years. But really, sparkling wine has been going on for eons. But the whole hook was it was usually accidental, where in part of the making of wine processes, when it's converting the sugars into alcohol, it does create a CO2 gas. And at times when that capsule is closed, whether it was one of those old urns that you see the Romans used, or even just a large vat, all of a sudden that CO2 was created, and it created a natural bubble. And that is sort of the first method of which way they call it, the ancestral method, in which just it naturally occurs. And it's just, again, the sugars and the yeast inside that wine creates a CO2 gas, and it happens naturally. And now there's winemakers that actually have captured that process, and the ancestral method is still out there and still used today. There's a wee bit of a misnomer, or a lot of people think and have heard about the old monk, Dom Perignon. And so many people think he's the one who actually invented making champagne. And actually, it's not the case at all, like I said before, that the sparkling wines have been going on for years, years, years. But the one thing that the monk did is he perfected the actual art of making the sparkling wine. And what he had did, you know, you're sitting around, you're in this little cloister, there's not much for monks to do. So he sat and toiled and worked with the actual formulas in which you would make that. And what he did is he created you start with a nice, lovely white wine, and you add sugars and yeast into the bottle, and that creates the sparkling gas in a controlled environment. And then you encapsulate it and let it go, and it ferments, and it creates that gas. So Dom Perignon, we owe a lot to him because he had and perfected it, but he also didn't invent it. It's been going on for years and years and years. And, you know, you see sparkling wines across the world right now. Everyone makes a bit of their own sparkling wine, whether it's little sparkling Shiraz from Australia, Cavas from Spain. You see the Spumantes from Italy and Proseccos. There's all kinds of sparkling wines being made across the world, and everyone's a little bit more different and a little bit more unique than the other one. But you all have to kind of follow these classic methods in which to do it. Now, the one method I don't recommend people using or trying, and it's generally your most inexpensive champagnes. I mean, we're talking sparkling wines, I should say. Sparkling wines that are, you know, $5, $6. They're not very well made, and generally those are made with what they call the soda method, and that's basically where they just get white wine, or any wine for that matter, and they just charge it with CO2 just the way you would, you know, whether you're making seltzer or whatever, you just charge it with that. The reason why it's so inexpensive is because that method is so inexpensive to do. So I would avoid those personally unless you have a huge, huge crowd and, you know, you're on a tight budget. And you're maybe even going to mix those with orange juice to make mimosas to make them taste a little better. I would kind of avoid those just in general. In my humble opinion, they're not that well made. Maybe if you have a little bit too much, you're going to have a heck of a hangover the next day because of that charged CO2. The next method, though, is probably the method used all across the world, and that's the Charmat method. Now, the Charmat method, a little bit more industrial. So what they do is they get that grape juice, they get that wine, and they have it in a huge, large vat. What they do is they close off that vat, and they add the sugars and yeast inside that vat, and that creates the carbonation. And then eventually, once they hit the stride and all the recipe is just right, they then filter it and then put it in the bottle. So the fermentation actually happens in this large vat rather than inside the bottle. And that's the Charmat method. You see that very common all around the world just because it's a lot more inexpensive, but it's still a quality way to make those sparkling wines. And believe it or not, you see it in many, many winemaking processes, even the winemaking in Prosecco. Now, so many people are into Prosecco these days. It's a great wine. And the interesting thing is the Italians have begun to protect the word Prosecco for the simple fact that it's all spread throughout the world, and they want to protect their name and their brand and their style of sparkling wine, very similar to what the French have always done up in Champagne. The interesting thing is they even had to change the name of the grape varietal that they use, because the grape varietal that they used to use, or they still use, used to be called Prosecco. And so people could plant that grape varietal all around the world and use it and put Prosecco on there, and the Italians didn't like that. They actually changed the name to Galera. And now usually Proseccos are made in that Charmant style, that large voluminous vat, and then they put in the CO2. But the one thing you notice with a Prosecco is that it is a style that the Italians call Frizzante. And the Frizzante style, you know, to not get super, super technical, is at 2 atmospheres of pressure in the bottle, where proper champagne and sparkling wine done in the traditional is about 4.5 to even up to 6 atmospheres. So it's a more subtle fizz. It isn't that, you know, real sharp, crisp bubble that you see in champagne, but it's a great little inexpensive, but it's a Frizzante. It's a softer style. And that's one reason why people like it, and it's a little bit more less expensive. You know, Proseccos you see ranging from about $10 all the way up to maybe about $16-$17. They're very inexpensive, but they're very well made. One of my favorites, believe it or not, and I will plead guilty to it because I know the fellows who made it, is our Forelli Prosecco. It's made with our family friends over in Italy. The Girellis and the Farrell family got together to create this, and boy, it's been terrific. This 2024 year was the year of no Forelli Prosecco. We had all kinds of shipping issues, all kinds of problems. People don't need to know about that, but we just got in 700 cases of it, and we're so proud to get it back on our shelves because it's a wonderful, wonderful Prosecco. There's also another one called Bacio della Luna, the Kiss of the Moon. Great little Prosecco that people can just enjoy and like. But also, if you're looking for other things, one thing to look for, because the French are a little finicky about what they want to put on those bottles, are the word Cremant. Cremant is now the style of usage that they use outside of the Champagne region. So there will be a Cremant de Loire, a Cremant de Jura, a Cremant de Rhône, or a Cremant de Bourgogne. And one of my favorite Cremant de Bourgogne is Louis Bouillot. It's a great wine. You know, the Burgundy area is one of the closest to Champagne as far as the grapes that they use and the styles in which they do it. And that Cremant de Bourgogne is just terrific. And the great thing about it is you get the caliber of Champagne, but it's at a lot less price. It's around $25, where a lot of the Champagnes are a lot more expensive. So with that, you kind of see that. But, you know, we also have some great deals on those champagnes. The champagnes are wonderful as well. We have a great deal on Moët and Chandon right now at about $46, $47, which is a wonderful bottle if you want true champagne. And the French are so territorial about that champagne, they even write it into treaties now that only the wines that come from the Champagne region can be called champagne.
Absolutely, and what a difference. Yeah, and I've tasted, thanks to Haskell's, some really good stuff. If you're not, I think way back when, I'm talking 100 years ago, when somebody said, hey, try this. It was called cold duck. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you sent a shiver up my spine, Denny.
I'm sorry.
Ironically, yeah. They still make it. And the old story of the cold duck was, you know, the servants used to go to the manor house and collect up all the old wine from the party before. They put it all in one vat, kind of charge it up, and they ate it the next day with all the cold duck leftovers. It probably should have been thrown out with the cold duck leftovers, because yes. It was just, again, that was made in that style, that soda method, which, again, yeah. If you have a little bit too much, there might be a little fog on there, like outside, but it's going to be between your eyes because it's not very well made. But there's so many great sparklers.
I'm sorry I brought that up. But listen, Ted, we've got a minute to go. Let's talk about Haskell's. We can find some really good stuff.
You are correct. And there's a Haskell's out there full of sparkling wines to take care of your New Year's needs. We have Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with reparking on the weekends. We have Haskell's in Minnetonka, Haskell's in St. Paul, Haskell's in Bloomington, Haskell's in downtown Excelsior, Haskell's out White Bear Lake, or if you're out by Stillwater, stop by our Haskell's Stillwater store. If you're down south, come by our Haskell's Faribault right off of 35. We also have a Haskell's up in Plymouth and Haskell's in Maple Grove. If you can't reach any of those, you can always stop by Haskell's 24/7 at Haskell's.com. We're ready for you, and we'll take care of all your sparkling needs. And we just want to wish all the listeners out there a wonderful, wonderful, and safe New Year's and a happy 2025.
Hear, hear. Happy New Year, Ted. Let's talk in the new year.
I look forward to that. Happy New Year to you, sir.
Ted Farrell from Haskell's.